Welcome into the show. Thanks for tuning in this Tuesday morning, June the 4th. It is 9 a.m. on the East Coast. This is your 6 a.m. West Coast wake-up call at all time zones in between and around the world. Thanks for tuning in. Today, the big game of the day, especially for the U.S. audience, is France versus the U.S. in the U20 World Cup. This is going to be the biggest test so far for this U.S. team. This team was heralded as the, you know, up and comers, and the place where we have a lot of talent, etc. And today is going to be a big test in regards to that, because France is going to bring it. I mean, France has got a lot of talent. They are coming in as players with a good amount of experience as well. I mean, these are young players, but they are players who are prepared for this moment. And so, you know, when you get through and look, when you're in a tournament, it's about win and move on. There's no doubt about it. But in terms of your identity and the way that you want to play, the execution of whatever your game plan is, whether that is to sit back and counterattack, whether that is to dominate possession and dominate that possession in your opponent's third. In other words, you're attacking third. You're in and around the goal you're trying to score on. You know, whatever the case may be, you've got to be able to execute that style in a very, you know, solid way. So if you're unable to do so, if it is a problem, and you get into a match like this where you are unable to execute under pressure, execute when things aren't going right, when things aren't going the way that you hope they would, you can run into trouble. And the U.S., you know, ran into a little bit of trouble in their last match. They were sloppy in possession. They were sloppy in, you know, in their execution of their game plan. So today is a day where you're going to, you know, have to be solid and clean in whatever you go out to execute. And I have no idea how Tab is going to send the team out to play. I imagine they're going to try to play, you know, a possession-based style, and it will be interesting to see if they can pull that off and execute that against France. You know, these are players who are coming up through this French system. France just won the World Cup last summer. There's a lot of talent here, a lot of youth with experience and quality, and this U.S. team is going to have its hands full in terms of getting past this team and moving on. There have been criticisms. You know, if you get on social media and you read, you know, comments about players on this team, there have been criticisms of certain players. You know, maybe they're not quite as good as some people think versus other players, etc. The one thing that I would say watching this team is I don't see any players that pop out to me as, you know, massive difference makers. Not to say that there aren't some quality talents on the field, but none have really stood out yet. That doesn't mean they don't have the talent to stand out. So I want to make that distinction. There are some very talented players, but talent is only part of that equation. You've got to have the ability to take a moment, take that opportunity to be a difference maker and do it consistently. You know, the one thing that is, I think, remarkable about Messi is the fact that It's not the goals that he scores. If you go and look at his career highlights and goals, and you watch a goal and you're like, man, that was a nice goal, other people can score those goals. What makes Messi so remarkable, though, is his consistency at executing in those moments, his consistency in delivering excellence, at being a difference maker. It goes beyond a level of, hey, I made a shot in that moment that changed the game one time every 4, 5, 6, 8, 10. Maybe it's the only time in the season that I pull that off, right? Whereas Messi is so consistent in that he's able to deliver repeatedly. And that is it, that when I'm talking about being a difference maker, I'm not talking about a one-off moment. These young players, when you're watching these young players, look at the consistency, because that's what you're going to get on the level. That's what you're going to get day in and day out if you're a club, if you are a player in a league and you're on a squad and you're trying to deliver. What are we getting from you consistently? So when I talk about the term difference maker in this aspect, in relation to this team, what I've yet to see is consistency at being a difference maker. I do think there are some talents on that field that can become super quality difference makers, but we don't have one yet who is stepping up, doing it consistently, where the team can rely on them and it locks them in. That doesn't mean that there aren't talents on the field. That doesn't mean that we don't have some good players. But, you know, I guess one of the ways I would look at this is if you go back to last year, that French national team that won the World Cup, and you look at that squad, it would be hard to say that Christian Pulisic is even in the squad, much less getting a sniff of the starting lineup. Now, when you look at Christian Pulisic, he has been our best player over the last 18 months, 2 years. He's been the most celebrated. He's been playing at the biggest club. He's now heading out and on a transfer to Chelsea. And he would not even be getting a sniff of the starting lineup in France and would be finding it very difficult to even make the squad. So when we're talking about talent and the disparity of where we really are versus the top echelon in the world, we're not even close. So when I'm referring to this squad and being difference makers and being consistent, that's what I'm talking about. It doesn't mean we don't have the talent. We have the talent, but it's learning to be consistent with your talent, learning to be a difference maker every match on the level, being consistent in your performance. And that really is one of the problems we have with our American system. It does not require enough focus, enough intensity in your day-to-day training. It does not require enough focus and intensity in your matches. You are able to turn off, like mentally turn off in matches in Major League Soccer or in development academies, etc. The quality level, the consistency at which our players are being tested day in and day out, coming up domestically here in America, is not high enough. And therefore, when we get a player like a Chris Richards and he is able to transfer to Germany, to Bayern Munich, when we get a player like Alex Mendes who can sign in Germany and begin to develop in that environment, doesn't mean that they didn't have good coaches in America, but you can never recreate that environment here in America that you are going to experience over in Europe, the cauldron of daily testing. And so I think now that we've seen some of these players on this U20 squad who have gone to Europe. They've not been there very long in regards to their development path. So seeing how they develop over the next 6 months, 12, 18, 24 months, and see if they can begin to develop into consistent difference makers, that is going to be the key for our senior team and them coming into that level down the road. But it's also going to be the key for this particular squad, even in today's matches, developing every day, utilizing the environment that you're in, getting better, and being consistent, being a consistent difference maker. That is the test. And today you're going to play a team in France who have developed in a system that requires consistency. It requires focus and dedication and commitment and intensity in your daily training and in your matches. And when you have players who have developed in that have been selected from environments like those, it allows them to be better in these moments. So the U.S. is definitely fighting an uphill battle, and it'll be interesting to see how well the U.S. team is able to gel and be consistent today in executing their game plan. But it will also be one of those moments where these U.S. players are going to have to work mentally even harder than they normally do when you're playing a talented team who has developed a level of consistency in performance like this French national team has been able to do coming up in the French system versus our American system. And it's just it is an issue that every player has to deal with and an issue that every coach in America has to deal with. It's why we talk so much on this show about opportunity and access for everyone, making the game on all levels in all areas about sporting merit, about competition, not about gatekeepers, not about paid access, not about the haves and the have-nots. It's about everyone getting access and then letting the best rise. If we do that, we will start to have environments in this country that rely on consistency of excellence and not consistency of mediocrity. If you are the only game in town, you're not going to compete as hard as you would have to if you had competition. It is a natural byproduct of not having competition. You don't push yourself as hard. And it's really hard to artificially execute on that. It just is what it is. So that's why we need that. And so the leaders at U.S. Soccer have got to get to a place where they finally understand what we need and why we need it and then execute on that. You know, they're already breaking FIFA's bylaws. And they're non-compliant in a variety of areas. But if they really want U.S. soccer to grow, and that's the question that they've got to ask, one of the reasons why we need to be FIFA compliant is it does create environments. And Americans love competition. We have the greatest sports economy on earth. We are into sports. So it's not a matter of ambition in this country. It's a matter of the gatekeepers at the federation, and that includes Soccer United Marketing and Major League Soccer, not having monopolistic control over the federation and allowing everyone to play and do so based on their on-field performance. So, you know, we'll see how that affects today's results, and obviously we will be rooting very hard for this U.S. national team, this U-20 squad, and Tab and his coaching staff to pull off the win today. But keep in mind, going into this game, France are the favorites. This is an uphill battle, and we are going to be in the test of our tournament so far. No team that this U.S. team has played up until this point is going to test us the way that this France squad is going to test us. So It will be interesting to see. The game kicks off at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. USA, France, U20 World Cup. Tune in and watch. We'll all be watching and rooting for you guys who are on the team to go out and give a great performance today and hopefully be able to win and move on. Yesterday, we announced a new sponsor for the show, and it is Dutkick Brand, and really excited to have them in the show as a sponsor. And I want to show you one of their products is these little cards, and I don't know how well you can see these. See if I can get you on a different shot here, but this little card has a soccer field on it, and it's able for you as a coach to be able to get out and work on certain things and kind of have an easy way to communicate ideas, show your players what you're asking of them. I was running a small-sided training session last night, and this was a card from our actual training session that we did last night, working on some finishing and overlapping runs in and around the box. And this was such a big help to us in being able to work on that concept. They could see it, and I wasn't having to try to go and manually draw everything out or spend a lot of time on a computer trying to map it out. These cards are available to purchase at dutkickbrand.com. So if you have not done that and gotten an order in, you should do so. If you use the promo code DWSHOW, at dutkickbrand.com, you will get 10% off your order, and at the same time support this show, and we really appreciate you supporting this show as well. So thanks for tuning in this morning. We will be right back after this break from Dutkick Brand with David Walding of the Central Texas Lobos. So we will be right back after this break after a word from Dutkick Brand. Welcome back to the show this Tuesday morning, June the 4th. Thanks for tuning in. Again, U.S. versus France, 11:30 Eastern Standard Time in the U20 World Cup this morning. Big game. Win and move on. It's going to be the biggest test they've had. So we are really excited this morning to welcome on to the show David Walding, the president of the Central Texas Lobos. David, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So you are in the Austin, Texas area. What got you, you know, interested in the game, and why, you know, Austin, Texas, in terms of a base, you know, you could go anywhere in this country. Why Austin, and why stay or be involved in the game in the way that you are?
Right. Well, I grew up in Louisiana, and then I moved to Austin for college. And like a lot of people who moved to Austin, fell in love with the city and just stayed and never left. So I've been in and around and involved in the Austin community since about 1989, and very kind of put down my roots here in this community. So I wanted to develop something with the community. My work in Austin has been mostly, my day job has been nonprofit work. I've been working with the immigrant community in a nonprofit capacity in Austin. And so the soccer team originally came about in the 90s as a way for me to work with the youth that I was working with, mostly from Central America, who were coming up, teenagers. And it's something that, you know, whether they were coming from whatever country, from Central America, from Africa, from wherever, they all had that common bond of soccer. And it was a way to bring in the kids into the community, integrate, have a common goal, no pun intended.
So
it's just kind of grown from there.
So tell us a little bit about the Central Texas Lobos as an organization. What all do you do from a programming standpoint, and what is kind of the big idea of the club? What are the goals, ambitions for Central Texas Lobos?
Well, at the moment we run our team in the Gulf Coast Premier League, which is our main focus as a program at this point. We have a youth academy, which we have started to really build this year. So we were able to get a permanent location for us here in South Austin. We have our own field, which is going to be, we'll be putting in facilities over the coming year and a half. And it's going to be a permanent home location for us. And we believe that's really going to help us build our youth academy program. From there, we also have a indoor team with the Premier Arena Soccer League, and we have a team in the Honduran third provision right now in Honduras. It's called the Liga Mayora in El Paraíso, Honduras. So we have a pro team down there that we've been developing for about 2 years.
So is that team in Honduras, is that directly connected to Central Texas Lobos, or is that something that is an association? And what do you try to, is there a tie-in with your GCPL team and that team in terms of players, player development, player opportunities, et cetera?
It's directly owned by the Central Texas Lobos, so that's our proprietary team. How that came about was we do have a lot of Honduran players in our program. Austin has a lot of Honduran, a large Honduran community, and so part of what we do is we work with the Honduran community here in Austin, and there's a lot of youth coming through our program. So we, about 3 years ago, established a connection with the Honduran national team program, the youth national team, and they've been up to Austin to help with our projects here. I've gone down to Honduras and trained with the Honduran U-20 squad, and so we try to build a connection there with the Honduran Federation. There was an opportunity then for this team in a place called El Paraíso, Honduras, which is close to the Nicaraguan border, where the Federation felt there has not been a lot of development into the soccer program in that country. And we wanted to come into that community, which is a very poor community. It's a coffee-growing region, and try to help start a program in that area to to develop soccer in that community as well, similar to what we're doing here in the South Austin area.
So being there based in Austin, having that program in Honduras, and then launching in and putting some, you know, effort into a field, you're saying is going to open up more opportunities on the youth side. How did the field come about? Because that is something that a lot of teams, whether you're NYCFC and you're playing in Yankee Stadium in a garbage setup, in my opinion, you know, or you are the Central Texas Lobos and you're playing in the GCPL, getting a stadium, a field of your own that is a home base that is yours, is not as common as, you know, we would like for those of us who want to see American soccer really grow to a level that is competitive globally. So how did you guys pull that off in getting a field and getting a home base that you could call your own?
Right. That's a great question. A convergence of circumstances that I don't believe any club could ever possibly duplicate, but it's one of those goals that after the club had been playing at that level for a while, it became very obvious to me that unless we were able to pull that off at some point, there was not going to be long-term viability. We needed that space of our own to have that long-term viability, because relying on public fields, whims change from year to year. It's a huge expense for the club, as well as it was really hard to build a youth program when you have to move every 6 months, year, 2 years to a different location. So we felt that the permanent location was absolutely essential. So we really focused and put in a few years of groundwork to that. I have to give the Gulf Coast Premier League a shout out on that, because they were very helpful to us in that goal and helping us realize that goal. We got a donation, a property donation through another nonprofit that we were able to leverage when this land came available in Austin, and use that to do a direct land purchase. So, and then I'm working with the Unite the Game Foundation out of New Orleans, which again, the league helped us make those connections so that we can actually develop the field, put in the drainage and everything that's necessary for us to take that next step with the field.
So with that field, what all are you going to be able to do? Is it one field, and are you going to be able to have facilities, bathrooms, stadium type setup? What are you going to be able to execute on that property with that field?
That's another great question, and it's going to be somewhat dependent on the city. I think we have a very good relationship right now with the city of Austin. My district council member, Delia Garza, is the new mayor pro temp in Austin, and so we went to her before we even made the purchase. She's been very supportive. I think there's been, with the Austin Bold and the Austin FC coming into the community in the past year, there's been a huge kind of interest and focus on soccer and what needs to be done, and especially the lack of facilities. So we have to go through all of the process for permits for the property and submit planning and everything to the city. But the plan is to have one full regulation-sized grass field, and then one synthetic mini pitch on the property, along with, you know, seating and amenities, restrooms. We haven't quite figured out how to tackle yet, but of course that's going to have to be in the plan at some point. Fencing, concessions, the whole nine yards. We hope it'll be a very complete facility that'll suit all of the needs that we have for the Gulf Coast Premier League, and that we'll be able to start playing there, if not next year, then the following year.
And are there ambitions at Central Texas Lobos to expand your team and your program beyond, you know, a 10-game season in the summer? Are you looking for that men's team to be able to play a little bit longer season, especially having a home stadium that you could play out of?
Absolutely, and it's something that we talked with the league about already. I think as the league expands into Texas, that's going to be something that we're definitely looking at as a league, even for the Texas division anyway. We're the first and only Texas team currently. We are not comprised of primarily university players. So we do look at what we're going to be doing for the rest of the year. Currently, we do play, you know, in the municipal league, and we pick up some tournaments. We hope to be back into the U.S. Open Cup qualifying this year, we also have a trip planned possibly out of country, maybe once or twice this year. So I think we have some other things going, but I would love to see us put together some type of winter schedule that we could play over the winter as well.
So in your setup there in Texas, you are kind of out on an island, even though Texas
yes.
is by no means an island, but you feel like an island because you're not just in Texas. You're not right next to Louisiana either. I mean, you got a little bit of a journey to get to you once you leave Louisiana from the GCPL and get into Austin. So what are you hoping to help with the GCPL in terms of getting into Texas with more teams? Is that basically creating a separate Texas conference of the GCPL that would allow you to be a little bit more local in terms of your travel and competition?
That's exactly right, and we've spoken with the league about that. I believe that is the goal of the league, is to be able to create a Texas conference. I think that's very realistic. We're hoping to be able to pull that off within the next year or two, because the travel is the biggest issue for us at this point. Our away games are all about 7-hour road trips. So not only the distance and the toll it takes on the players and coaching staff, but the expense, overnight stays and so forth for all of our road trips is adding up. We would love to have more local competition. So I'm not sure exactly the areas, but obviously Houston, Dallas, San Antonio are focus, potentially Corpus Christi, maybe some other regions closer to Louisiana. But I know the league is actively working on that. That's one of the things we spoke about when we entered the league, is that we had a meeting as a club. I met with the players at the time, and because of the quality of the Gulf Coast Premier League, we were perfectly willing and happy to go into the league and make those trips initially. But again, sustainability, we would like some Texas teams pretty soon to start entering and being able to play more locally.
So you're on the front lines every day. You are running a club, operating a club, and
yes.
having to facilitate, you know, these kinds of issues and work around them, find solutions, etc. When people throw out, you know, promotion, relegation, open access, I'm a big proponent of this. But one of the things that gets often thrown out when you're looking at this is to just kind of cookie cutter copy the kind of setups you see overseas. So one of the for the English speaking as your first language leagues and setups that people follow is obviously the English Premier League. It has a lot of coverage on NBC Sports, etc. here in America. And when you look at that system, you see the Premier League as a national league, the championships a national league, League One is a national league, League Two is a national league. So when you talk to people and they'll say, well, you know, we need a first division national, and USL's got to be national. This got to be national. I make the contention and have made this statement privately and kind of discussing how to implement an open system is we have to take into our setup the uniqueness of our geography. It is both a blessing and a curse. And so we have to, but we have to address that when we are looking at connecting leagues. Even right now, as a closed league, that in every league in the country is a closed league, you may have things inside of yourself, like the UPSL will have some divisions and promotion relegation, but you're not promoting out of the top level of the UPSL into the NPSL or the USL or MLS. So you're still a closed system, whether you're the GCPL or MLS. So in our current setup, even in that, we have to take into account travel and geography and distance. And so I think we should regionalize as quick as possible for in order for soccer to really reach the level it needs to go. And that means at even higher levels than the GCPL. So you being on an island, having to travel 7 hours to get to a game, yeah, that's a big burden. It's a big ask. For your away games, just for the audience sake, as they're kind of thinking through, okay, I'd like to start a club somewhere, or I'd like to get involved with the club somewhere, and they're trying to figure out, you know, working out the specifics of executing and being able to do it. You know, they have the dream. They may look at a Chattanooga and see where they've come in the last 10 years and go, man, I'd like to do something like that. That'd be really cool. Let's go start a club. What are the realities that they're facing when they're looking at a steep travel budget where you do have overnight stays, etc.? Could you give us a little insight on that, like just a ballpark budget? If you travel to an away game and you're having to take into account a 7-hour drive plus hotels, plus, you know, per diem or food or whatever you got to do to take care of the guys, what are you looking at for a weekend?
Exactly. So one of the things we did before making the move into Gulf Coast was purchase a team van. So we made that one-time expense because otherwise what I've looked at is if we rent 2-passenger vans from Austin, and it would probably not be feasible to do 24 hours. We'd have to do 48 hours for our trips. We're looking at about $400 a piece, so about $750 to $800 just for the van rental. It made sense to me to make the upfront expenditure just to purchase a van and not have that rental expense at the beginning of the season. I would say we probably, with the van and the additional vehicle that we take, so we take 2 vehicles, probably $150 to $200 of gas, about $500 for the hotel for the night, and that's with the player staying 3 to a room. So it gets a little bit uncomfortable, but we purchased air mattresses so that people don't want to bunk together. They can spread out on an air mattress. We always choose a hotel with a free breakfast because our players were very upset the one time that didn't happen. So I've learned, keep the players happy, give them free food in the morning. And we put it back on our players to pay for their nightly meal. We've worked out with some of the teams in Gulf Coast this season to where when we travel, they provide a meal for us there and we'll provide it for them here in Austin. But otherwise, I would say if you add up van rental gas and hotel rooms, you're looking at close to $1,500 a trip.
Well, that'll add up real quickly when you're putting a budget together. And in your division of the GCPL, how many away matches do you have this season?
It's a 10-game schedule. We'll have 5 road trips, and they're all about equal distance. They're about 400 miles.
So you're looking at roughly $7,500 for your travel costs. Right.
Exactly.
So when these teams are making the trip out to you, they have that one big weekend where they're having to account for, whereas you're having to account for that five times.
That's exactly right.
Right. So you're operating on a you know, four or five times their travel budget to be in the league, which obviously makes sense why you would want more Texas teams to cut down your travel. And also, I think for the GCPL, it makes sense, you know, with the mission and the growth pattern of the GCPL as well, to expand
into
Texas.
Absolutely. I know that's their one of their kind of cornerstones of the league is they want to cut down those travel costs. So it's something that we did have extensive conversations before joining, both from our perspective of can we commit to that expense and the league's perspective of do they want to add in that piece? Were they ready for that move? And we both decided it was the right time and the right philosophy for the league going forward, but with the goal in mind of adding in a Texas conference within, you know, 2 to 3 years is the goal.
So building out what you're doing with your program and doing the things that you're doing with stadium and infrastructure, et cetera, what do you hope to do in the youth space to make an impact there in Austin, and especially to the communities that you're currently serving? What kind of opportunities are you hoping to provide them, having a facility of your own, being able to run programming the way you want to run it?
Exactly. We're not overly popular, per se, with the youth soccer community in the area, precisely because we're focusing on trying to not be in that pay-to-play youth system. We want to be outside of that system, make it a very, very economical and high-quality youth program where kids aren't paying thousands of dollars a year to be able to play. We're located in a very low-income area of Austin, a lot of minority community in the area. A lot of immigrant families in the area. So we're very open to the multicultural aspect of Austin and integrating it into the club. We also understand that we have to keep prices very accessible and try to supplement our operating costs some other way. So it's not designed for the kids to come in and, you know, support the program entirely. It's designed to run, I think the average cost for the kids is about $35 a month to be in the youth program. And then we have economic need scholarships below that and discounts for if there are multiple kids in the family, because we see that quite a lot now with our registration. So if you have one child and a decent income, you're looking at about $35 a month. Everybody else is somewhere significantly below that. So part of the point of the program is to be able to open it up to all of the kids in our neighborhood. There's no very established club in our community, in our part of Austin. So what we have are clubs from other areas in the suburbs coming in and trying to take kids out of the community and have them go elsewhere for practices and games and so forth. So we want this to be a true community-based club, a community-based youth system that provides opportunities for literally everyone in the community to be able to come out and play, regardless of their income or their personal situation, their finances. Again, that comes out of my work with nonprofit, working with unaccompanied children. So I had a lot of kids come in to the system who were here without parents at all. So they have very little support. They have no transportation. Austin implemented an ESL school that's a magnet school, so they don't even go to school in their community. They're bussed out of the community to go to school. So we wanted to create something that's very ingrained in this area of Austin, be a community-based school program, after school program, for the youth club, and not have to worry about the economics of it, but still be able to come in and train with, you know, the Lobos coaching staff. We are bringing in FC Austin Elite, which is the local women's program in Austin, to help with the girls. We have an affiliation with the Club America Academy out of Nayarit in Mexico. We have our affiliation with the Honduran youth program. So between that and the resources from the Gulf Coast that they're providing us, we think it's going to be a very strong program where kids can come in and get a very good experience without having to pay thousands of dollars to do it. So it's accessible to everybody.
I ran I started a free to play youth club. It was a single squad, very small program a few years ago, ran it for a couple of years, and for a variety of reasons ended up passing that on to some other parents and having to take on some other projects. But in that time that I was running that, you know, we were dealing with some different issues, obviously being free to play. Our big goal, you know, a lot of people will say this, but when they go to launch something, they'll say, well, we want to go reach kids that are not currently in the system, not currently playing. And, you know, we had a few kids that were, you know, from the, you know, system, as you call it, in terms of, you know, the pay to play system or whatever, that came over. And we had some that would come over and actually train with us and then go back and train with their pay to play club as well. But the bulk of our kids were not playing organized soccer, and that was what the program was designed for. And we saw that our biggest challenge wasn't finding interested players. It was transportation. And the reason is that a lot of their parents, in our squad of about 25 kids, like I said, we're very small. But in our squad of 25 kids, we had 10 countries represented, every continent except Antarctica. We had a variety of backgrounds and socioeconomic status levels and, you know, work schedules and et cetera, you know. You know, English was not necessarily the common language, especially with all the parents, just the different backgrounds.
Correct.
Or whatever. And so in that, we found that with work schedules and stuff and such, that one of the biggest issues that these kids had that wanted to play and they loved coming out to train was getting to practice. And so we actually had to start just basically going and picking up, you know, at least a third of the team every day to go just to get to practice. Are those issues that you see in your community, or is your community local enough that they can get to practice, at your site where you train, or is that an issue that you have to deal with as well?
No, those are the exact issues we're seeing. So, again, this is kind of new to us in this location, but I've lived here for, you know, 25 years. So, I'm aware of those issues, and transportation is the main problem. Any transportation issue you can come up with in the United States, triple it when you get to Austin, because the public transport and the systems here in Austin are well behind the growth of the city. So we have the additional, and there's a program in Austin, Upper 90. I want to give them a little bit of free airtime here, because they work after-school programs for the kids as a nonprofit, free to play. And I've had these conversations with them. The problem for that is the magnet school. So by Austin ISD creating this magnet school for non-English first language speakers at the high school level, by the time kids are 14 and up, they're at that particular school. With the transportation issues, they're not getting home sometimes until 7, 8 o'clock at night at best in a good day. So the after-school programs here for soccer are all based at the school sites. Well, the kids in this community can't participate in that because if they're going to that ESL school, they can't stay there after school, and they also can't go to their local school in the community. So those are the kind of issues we're dealing with. We have no lighting system at any field in Austin in this area. So if you come back to, say, the 78704 zip code after school and you're getting home at 7 o'clock at night and it's dark, there's literally nowhere to go play. So that's part of the issues we're dealing with, is putting in this lighting system, putting in the synthetic turf mini pitch so we can keep that open after hours, so to speak, have a safe place for kids to come and play. It is directly on a bus line, so we do have that advantage. But, yes, we're going to have to deal with transportation. We're well aware of that kind of stumbling block coming our way with the transportation. Part of it is we work with kids with their schedules. So if they can't make all the practices, if there's a work schedule, we have to accommodate. Right now we're working with them on that, whereas some other clubs are just like, you need to be at practice and that's that. But we're trying to work with them around some of those issues. We have childcare issues, because even if the family, especially with the girls' teams, we're finding out a lot of them, the issue is they want the girls especially to come home and help care for younger siblings. So we're having to deal with, well, what if we set up something for the kids where you can bring them out to the field and they can be, you know, entertained and supervised while we're having a practice? Will that work? So it's all those kind of issues we're having to deal with. That's the exact, what you've mentioned are the exact problems we're coming up against.
Well, I first just want to say I applaud your efforts and your work there. It is so needed. And, you know, a lot of people think of Austin, Texas, and they think about Tech and they think about South by Southwest. And those are obviously, you know, good attributes of the city. But every city has areas that are underserved, and you are in there rolling up your sleeves every day, providing programming and opportunities for a part of your community that doesn't have as much access as maybe some others might. So I really do commend you and applaud your efforts there. How can people follow the Central Texas Lobos and your work, learn more about what you're doing, et cetera, either through social media or online?
Right, social media, we're on Facebook, Twitter, at Centex Lobos, and you can check out the website, centexlobos.com, CENTEXLOBOS.com. There's a store. It's helpful if people want to just help out the club. We do depend on outside finances, so there's a store you can help purchase. Some items are pretty inexpensive, and that actually does really help out the club. And just follow us through the Gulf Coast and through our website.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for coming on the show, David. I really appreciate it, and I hope you have the best luck getting some more Texas teams into the GCPL to help you on the travel side and with all of your project work there, that it continues to grow and thrive. We need more of you in this country, quite frankly. So thank you for what you're doing, and we really appreciate you coming on the show this morning.
And I appreciate you having me on. Thanks so much.
Thank you. That was David Walding of the Central Texas Lobos, and really am grateful that he came on the show. Thanks so much to him for making time and sharing his story. Our sponsor this half hour is Charity Water. Learn more about Charity Water at charitywater.org. They are bringing clean drinking water to people all over the world, changing lives, changing villages. Learn more about them at charitywater.org. We will be right back after this.
No one, no man, no woman, no child should ever have to drink green water with bugs, with algae, with disease in it. Bad water and a lack of toilets kills more people than all the wars in the world. We know how to bring clean drinking water right now to every single person on earth. And when you can bring water into communities, it truly transforms them. It changes everything. Right? You could know that you'd made a difference. You could know that you had truly impacted the life of a family, of a community, of a region. There was either clean water or there wasn't. We believe in a world where every single person has clean and safe water to drink, and we will continue fighting until that happens.
Welcome back to the show this Tuesday, June the 4th. Coming up at 11:30 Eastern Standard Time today, we have the U.S. versus France in the U20 World Cup. Big match. I encourage you to tune in and watch. Big test for them. We'll see how it goes. And, you know, we're rooting for you. Hope it goes well. So I wanted to spend the last few minutes here on the show today talking about an issue that, quite frankly, is ridiculous that we're even having to have this conversation in 2019. And that issue is the pay disparity at the FIFA World Cups between the men's and the women's World Cups. And the Australian women's national team, also known as the Matildas, are trying to put FIFA under pressure to introduce parity in prize money between the men's and women's World Cups. And they are leading this charge for equality. That's something that our U.S. women's national team, I hope, definitely joins and speaks out in solidarity with the Australian women's national team, the Matildas, and it makes sense because the women's national team, about 8 months after Hope Solo filed her suit against the Federation, filed their own suit against the Federation, and in terms of equal treatment. So I hope that our players at the World Cup speak out just like the Australian women's national team are speaking out. The Matildas, with support from their players' union, the Professional Footballers Australia, are prepared to take FIFA to court if it will not lift payments to female football on the back of public support. And one of the reasons why this is such a hot topic here and a big issue is we're not talking about, you know, the men getting, you know, $50 million and the women getting $40 million or $45 million. The women are scheduled to receive 7.5% of the purse handed out at the 2018 Men's World Cup in Russia. 7.5%. That means that the prize money on offer in France this summer for the Women's World Cup is $30 million compared to the men who had $400 million. $30 million versus $400 million. That is crazy. And to put this into perspective, the FIFA pays its top two executives, that's President Gianni Infantino and its General Secretary Fatma Samoura, more as an annual wage. This is combined between both of them, $4.1 million combined a year than the winners in France will receive, meaning the team that wins the World Cup this summer will receive $4 million as a team if you win. And the two top executives at FIFA combined make more than that on an annual salary. It's absurd, the treatment that the women are getting. And, you know, after failing to gain support from FIFA, they have decided that they are going to take their private campaign and their private efforts public. And they've even launched a website, and you can go learn more about what they're doing at OurGoalIsNow.com. OurGoalIsNow.com. And it's just launched here on the eve of the tournament. And they are asking for an immediate doubling of the total prize money from 30 to 57 million. You know, working to try to get FIFA to step up to the plate and do right by this Women's World Cup. The sport is growing on the women's side of the game, leaps and bounds. But that's not why they should get paid equally. They should get paid equally because it is a FIFA tournament. And if it's going to be a first team tournament on the men's side, the World Cup in 2018, 22, 26, etc., and this is the first team top level tournament on the women's side, they should be getting that kind of treatment as well, and growing the revenue and the purse available to the women is essential to that. So look, we've got to get to a place where we are taking care of duties, and that goes domestically with U.S. soccer, who is, you know, not getting the job done on a variety of issues, especially here on the pay and treatment disparity situation that Hope and I were talking about yesterday on the show, or, you know, FIFA on a global level. It's got to change, man. It's 2019. We got to get our act together. We got to treat people with dignity and respect. We can argue, we can disagree, but we should do so agreeably and treat people with respect. And one of the ways that we can do that is by how we handle moments like this. So hopefully FIFA succumbs to the pressure and does the right thing and begins to put more resources into the women's game as well. They have the money, they have the ability, and they should be leading the charge on that, not fighting it, just like the Federation should be leading the charge on that and not fighting it. So thanks for watching the show today. Thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate David Walding spending some time with us, talking to us about Central Texas Lobos and his work there in Austin, Texas. Tomorrow we have Ruth Nicholson, and it's going to be, I think, a really good conversation looking at governance and operations and how we do what we do better. So look forward to having her on tomorrow. Again, Hope Solo was on yesterday. You can watch or listen to the show at danielwortman.com every day, live weekdays, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We will see everybody again tomorrow.